Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Offshore drilling, the Hutari make headlines, and rain and flood this week. On Wednesday, President Obama announced his intention to push new offshore drilling for oil and gas with caveats.
The answer is not drilling everywhere all the time, but the answer is not also for us to ignore the fact that we are going to need vital energy sources to maintain our economic growth and our security.
Members of the Hutari Christian militia group arrested and charged with plotting to kill police officers. Here's U.S. Attorney Barbara McQuaid alleging that they stockpiled weapons to wage war on the U.S. government.
They had developed some explosive devices based on research they had done on the internet. These are the same kinds of improvised explosive devices that we hear about in roadside attacks in Iraq.
And three straight days of rain caused large-scale flooding in the Northeast. In West Warwick, Rhode Island, Angelo Padula Jr.'s used car lot was shut down.
Almost about 260 cars are all underwater. My building's underwater. My office trailer's underwater.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. You can join the conversation. Where do you stand on drilling, wiretaps, the militia news? What do you see in the job numbers? On the GOP outing to a lesbian bondage club? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Ruth Marcus, columnist and editorial writer for The Washington Post. Ruth Marcus, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
Great to have you. From Washington as well, we are joined by Kimberly Strassel, editorial board member for The Wall Street Journal. She writes their Potomac Watch column. Kim Strassel, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be here.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at The Atlantic. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Ruth, and Kim.
I want to go straight to these new job numbers. I mean, there's a lot going on this week, but underneath it all, Americans really care about employment. 17% underemployment, total 9.7 still, 160,000-plus jobs created, but a lot of census workers in that number. Kim Strassel, what do you see in the numbers?
Yeah, I think that one thing that has a lot of economists very worried here, you're right, 160,000 new jobs, which is more perky than we've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
When they start to break them out, though, about 48,000 of them are census workers. And census hiring tends to peak in March and April and May, but these jobs only tend to last about 8 weeks.
It'll come and it will go, those.
It will come and it'll go, and what that means is come summertime, you're going to have these people going back into the workforce, and that could affect and push the unemployment number up yet again. Another thing that is worrying economists just a little bit is that, you know, some of this was expected as a bounce back after the huge snowstorms of February.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question that's really everyone is trying to answer right now is how sustainable this actually is, what it actually means for the private job market. And if you start to look at the numbers and the jobs numbers over the past year, one of the things that worries people some is that about 108,000 of jobs created have been jobs for the federal government. And so what's got people worried is what is the situation in the private sector and how are they faring because of stimulus?
Is there real job creation coming there? If anything, the Treasury Secretary was underselling, certainly not overselling this week. Here's a little tape he talked with Matt Lauer on NBC's Today Show on Wednesday, saying unemployment will remain high for quite a while.
You're going to start to see businesses across the country start to add to payroll again. That's going to come. The economy is growing now. That's the first step. But with growth, more jobs will come. But the unemployment rate is still terribly high, and it's going to stay unacceptably high for a long period of time. It's going to take a long time to bring it down just because of the damage caused by the recession.
Ruth Marcus, President Obama is still talking about health care this week, but everybody's got their eye on those November midterms, and jobs are going to be very big there. What do you see the White House, you know, posture, agenda being now on jobs? What do they do with this problem?
Well, I think it's going to be very much along the lines of what we just heard the Treasury Secretary saying. This latest report is good news, especially after a report earlier in the week, a private report suggested a less good outcome. It's good news, but it's not great news for all the reasons that Kimberly said. It is going to be a long, slow climb out of the recession, and particularly when it comes to the unemployment rate. Even if you subtract out the census jobs, if you add 100,000 jobs in a month, it is not going to affect really the unemployment rate. That's what people look at, and it's going to probably get a little worse before it gets better. The White House is painfully, painfully aware of that, and really all they can do is ask for people to have some patience, which is hard, especially if you're one of the unemployed. Explain that things are looking up, but slowly, and try to convince people that they are doing everything possible, which is very difficult to do the best they can to spur job creation.
Patience is tough. President Obama using an agricultural parable this week. Jack, I want to get you, but let's hear the president first. I mean, they've got jobs to look at, and there's still health care to sell, I guess. Here was President Obama in Maine yesterday talking about health care reform. He mocked the media, he said, for hyping apparent divisions in American opinion. He said they were running headlines like, quote, "Nation still divided on health care reform. Polls haven't changed yet." The president quipped then, quote, "Well, yeah, it just happened last week," and went on with this little vignette.
Can you imagine if some of these reporters were working on a farm? And yeah, you planted some seeds, and they came out next day, and they looked, and nothing's happened. There's no crop. We're going to starve. Oh, no.
The president working his comic routine there, Jack, but it may not be so funny. Everybody waiting on job numbers and to see how health care turns out. What do you see coming here on the political front, Jack?
Well, on the jobs front, bad news for the Democrats. Just recently, the Republicans have been favored now by the public by a few percentage points on handling the economy. That's a real change over the last year. Steadily, the Democrats have come down. This chronic joblessness has taken its toll. So now the Republicans are favored by the plurality of voters looking toward the fall. Bad news. On the health care front, you know, yes. The reporters, we don't have new shoots coming up immediately from the health care overhaul, nor do we have the sidewalks cracking, as the president also said. We don't have Armageddon, and the apocalypse has not yet occurred, although it was predicted to happen. And interestingly, this week, Republicans have started to walk back on their bootless promise to repeal health care bootless, because they would have to take 20-plus seats in the Senate and 100-plus seats in the House in order to override a president's veto. So it wasn't going to happen. And they're finding out that there are things in the bill that, well, maybe they wouldn't really want to repeal. So you have Mark Kirk in Illinois. You have Senator Burr in North Carolina. You have Congressman Kingston in Georgia. You have Senator Corker. Again and again, they're walking back and saying, well, maybe what we want to do is modify this bill, correct it a little bit. So I think they want to make a sort of correction to Armageddon.
Kim, what do you think? Is the repeal push being dialed back here by the GOP on health care or not?
I think it's more being refined. You know, the repeal cry started out there with the Tea Party movement, which probably isn't as in tune to some degree with the political mechanics of repeal. And as Jack says, it's ridiculous. You would have to, as he said, you'd have to do massive changes in the Senate and the House, because anything less than that, you send it to the president and he vetoes it, and you don't have the requisite numbers to override that veto. But what's happening is a slow transformation of the message to repeal and replace, and implicit in that is the idea that you're not going to go in there and put forward a bill that just takes this away, that what you're going to do is put forward legislation that modifies significant parts of it. And the Republican strategy at this point is to go in, really have a good election, take a lot of seats, put the Democrats on the offense, and then use that to pressure them to come along to change some of what they view as the worst aspects of the bill. So that's going to be the strategy going ahead.
Kim, I've got to ask you, speaking of stripping things back, about this GOP outing to the Voyeur nightclub in West Hollywood. I'm reading scantily clad performers play out bondage and sadomasochistic scenes. The times that one female performer with a horse's bit in her mouth was being strapped to the wall by another. And this is a party of the Republican National Committee's Young Eagles. These are donors under 45. They've got a $2,000 sort of expense to the RNC. Now that director of their program is out. But what is up with this, Kim?
Well, seriously, who says conservatives are boring?
Woohoo!
Right?
Okay, lesbian bondage. I've never said that on the air before.
Look, part of this, this is obviously not good for Michael Steele, who's the RNC chairman. He was elected last year, and he's had a string of kind of bombshells like this, a lot of complaints within the party. He's put his foot in his mouth in a number of speeches and discussions and debates, and there was a lot of internal criticism. He published a book earlier this year, people asking what he's doing. So this is the latest in that, and it's amping up the pressure to ask him or find out if he is the guy for the job, and he's going to face a lot of pressure this next couple of weeks to prove that he is not just a spokesman for the party, which is how he has somewhat viewed his job since he took it, but whether or not he has the ability to assert the internal controls and do the fundraising and do the mechanics of get-out-the-vote operations that are necessary, and that's what the RNC exists to do.
Ruth, lesbian bondage? This is not exactly a mom and apple pie.
You're having a really good time saying
How often do you get that?
I was kind of looking forward to it myself. Well, I think Michael Steele has been a disaster for the Republican Party as chairman, but this particular lesbian bondage episode is not his fault. I find myself in the odd position of coming to his defense. Every time he opens his mouth, it seems he says something unwise. He's collecting money for paid speeches, which is outrageous for a party chairman. And fundamentally, he's been presiding over a party that is spending more money than it's taking in and on ridiculous things. That's a disaster. This particular disaster, as much fun as we've been having with it, is not the kind of thing.
Ruth, we'll be right back. We've got to take a short break right here. Ruth Marcus, Kim Strassel, Jack Beatty. This is On Point. Looking at a week in the news, bombings in Russia, offshore drilling, and Christian militia arrests in the USA. Ruth Marcus is here from the Washington Post. Kim Strassel from the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Our own Jack Beatty is here. And Ruth Marcus says, you can only imagine how disappointed I was to have to interrupt you in the middle of your observations on lesbian bondage.
And I'm glad to give you the opportunity to say it again. But look, if you look at the spending of any of these national political parties, you are going to find things that look outrageous, because the fact of the matter is that they have these donors who need a lot of what they call donor maintenance. And it tends to take place at very nice places like the Four Seasons, though not lesbian bondage clubs generally. And one of the things I found most fascinating about this episode was that the leader of the Young Eagles, who took her flock to Voyeur, was a woman. And I thought that was particularly troubling, actually.
Allison Myers, now gone. On the great seas, the president is turning to drill offshore. We all remember drill, baby, drill, but that was the Republican convention. Here we've got President Obama saying, time to look around and do some more off the eastern seaboard in the eastern Gulf of Mexico, and some off of Alaska. Here he is at Andrews Air Force Base on Wednesday announcing that push. He acknowledged that people would disagree with him over whether and how much drilling should be allowed.
But what I want to emphasize is that this announcement is part of a broader strategy that will move us from an economy that runs on fossil fuels and foreign oil to one that relies more on homegrown fuels and clean energy. And the only way this transition will succeed is if it strengthens our economy in the short term and the long run.
President Obama's version of drill, baby, drill. Let's go to our listeners on this. Beth in Schenectady, New York. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi. I feel very manipulated. Obama's got a statistician working for him to decide what's going to get him the vote. Not to do the right thing, but what's going to get him the vote. And I understand the reason that I'm drilling along the California coast is literally for that reason. I either heard it on your station or another. Which segues into the health insurance thing. Because I understand a family making $66,000 a year is going to end up under this law with less than $1,000 to live on. So it's the same scene. What's going to get the vote? And it is a Republican plan, which makes the drilling is a Republican plan, which makes me worried, because so was the health insurance plan.
Well, of course, there are differences, too. And I'm sure President Obama would say, yes, but we're actually, you know, investigating and putting restrictions. But what about it? Jeff, let me come first to you on the politics of offshore drilling. I guess both in the ballot box and on Capitol Hill. How do you interpret what's going on here?
Well, I was disappointed in the 2008 campaign when candidate Obama switched his position on offshore drilling because it seemed to be popular.
As John McCain did, as I recall.
Yes, that's right. They both did. And I think they were both wrong. And now I think that Beth is absolutely right. This is a political map of oil exploration. States that want it, it's offshore, fine for them. California doesn't want it. It's not. We won't have anything on California. Nothing in New England to upset the New England senators. And it looks like a ploy to bring aboard a few Republican senators. And thus far, the response does not seem overwhelming from the Republican senators. So I don't really think the president has distinguished himself with this proposal.
He calls it a bridge to a clean energy future. Kim Strassel, do you see it as a bridge to, what, 60 votes in the Senate on an Obama energy climate change bill?
Well, I think Jack should be thrilled if he didn't like Obama's position in 2008. Because what this actually does, what the plan actually does, is not allow for much drilling, and in fact reverses most of the opportunities for drilling. If you go back, one of the reasons 2008 was notable is because it was when both the congressional and the presidential moratorium on drilling for the Outer Continental Shelf expired or went away.
Mm-hmm. Since 1981, that had been there.
And so the past 2 years, in theory, actually, you could drill along California, along the Pacific Coast. You could drill along the eastern seaboard and in new places in Alaska if there were a plan in place to do that. What the Obama team has actually done is say, no, we're actually not going to allow drilling in most of those places. It agreed to a lease that was already underway in Virginia. It agreed to a lease that was already going on in Alaska. It canceled a lot of other Alaskans one. It's basically shut off the rest of the coast. And it says it will do a small patch in the eastern Gulf if Congress agrees to it. So, I mean, this is one of the reasons why the Republicans weren't very enthusiastic about this. And so it's going to be very interesting to see if that was put out there as bait to get them to sign on to a cap and trade bill, which he really wants, but it may not be enough.
Ruth Marcus, what do you think on the bill? And also, I mean, are we going to hear Republicans still saying drill, baby, drill this fall? Drill more.
Well, you are going to hear drill, baby, drill because it's so much fun to chant. But I wonder how Kim would explain then the fairly universal, though not complete, outcry among environmental groups. Were they just sort of pretending to be upset in order to continue this deception that the president is trying to foist on the American people?
I think it's because the environmental groups don't want any drilling, not one drop anywhere. So any concession, even the slightest one, is one that makes them unhappy. But
it's actually really interesting because I think that gets to the essence of the very strange position that the president finds him in. You have callers like Beth who from the left seem to be frustrated that the president from their point of view is selling out on whatever particular issue they are concerned about, whether it's gays in the military or abortion rights or immigration or this week environmentalism. And then you have the widespread perception on the other end of the spectrum that he's the reincarnation of Karl Marx. And so he's caught in this odd middle where I think the reality is exactly what this drilling decision shows, which is he is substantively attracted to split the difference decisions, and he's willing as a political pragmatist to do what it takes to get things done. And I think while he won't attract universal Republican support, this allows him the opportunity to attract the Lindsey Grahams and enough other Republicans that there may be an opportunity to get a broader energy bill done.
Jack, I want to hear you on that. Let me go first to James in Macomb, Michigan. James, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
Very well. What do you see, James?
Okay. What it is, I don't mind about the drilling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
You there, James?
Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. I don't mind about the drilling that Obama's doing, but the thing that gets me is when he talks about cap and trade. The Republicans are saying, "Oh, this is a setup. He's setting us up." And what the way I always thought, based on what I've been seeing and hearing about politics, is it's a bargaining. tool in politics. You always have to have something to bargain with. So that's my plan.
A little drilling there and a little cap and trade here. What do you say, Jack? Do you see the president's strategy working on climate, energy?
Well, we had an environmental expert on our show earlier this week who was saying just that, that if this is the price to get a substantial cap and trade bill, if this is part of the price, it's well worth paying. Question is whether this will be enough to bait the Republicans into supporting it. I really think it's as much about Mary Landrieu as it is about the Republicans. She represents, of course, Louisiana. Louisiana offshore is one of the places that would be open for leases. Louisiana, the state, would be eligible to get some of that money. This could well bring her from the opposed camp to the for camp, and I suppose that's worth something if it advances the issue. I think Ruth's observation is very sound. The president is nothing if not pragmatic. He will cut a deal where he has to in order to advance the larger objective. The question I have on this particular bill, on this particular ploy, is whether it's really worth the candle.
Let's go to Julie in Westford, Massachusetts. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm actually calling in about the previous topic around the exposure that Steele and others in the Republican Party are dealing with right now. From my perspective, I think that there have been a lot of voters that have been, to an extent, manipulated on their ethics, and that if they really start to pay attention to stories like this, I think the exposure of the truth of the money and the corruption and the not-so-great ethics behind what is often in the Republican Party is important to be known to people. I think they've really manipulated people to the point where often people will vote against what's really better for them as opposed to voting because they vote on their ethic code and they don't realize that there isn't really ethics better on one side versus the other.
Julie, we've got it. Let me put it to Kim Strasser first. Kim, we laugh, but, you know, there has been a moral claim by the GOP, and a little bondage club, among other drips, is not exactly supportive of that.
Well, the caller gets to put their finger on the real risk that the Republicans have with some of these headlines. And I'm not sure the moral issue is as much because, you know, look, as Ruth said earlier, this was not Michael Steele attending this club, and most people had no knowledge this happened. It was a bunch of donors who had gone to an officially organized RNC event and then ended up for drinks there afterward and submitted their expenses, which they should not have done. But I'm not sure they are a reflection of the entire party. The bigger problem that they have is right now the RNC is trying to replicate what President Obama did by spurring a lot of donations from small donors and Americans across the country. We're very enthusiastic right now about the Republicans, more enthusiastic than they've been for years. And the problem here is that if you've got lots of stories, not just about this club and drinks, but about limos and private aircrafts and glitzy hotels, there's a lot of cash-strapped Americans who are going to say, do I really want to donate $30 so that Michael Steele can ride around in a limousine? And so these headlines are a potential problem to them in their future fundraising. You know, they're having a pretty good year with a lot of enthusiasm out there, and this could be a potential problem for their momentum.
Here's Fox News, Megyn Kelly, on that front, fundraising, getting a mea culpa from RNC spokesman Doug Hay. This was on Monday.
People donate to the RNC, and they think it's going to go to fight election battles. They don't think it's going to go fund a fun night at Voyeurs in West Hollywood. And apparently this guy, Eric Brown, according to our information, did exactly that, and you guys paid him back.
Well, absolutely. That is what was done. It was unacceptable. The money will be reimbursed because, as you said, people expect that money is going to go into races, and it's going to fund victory programs so that we can beat Democrats this fall.
Hey, there's the line. I want to turn other news. The Christian militia group, Hutari in Michigan, got a lot of attention this week. Here's U.S. Attorney in Detroit, Barbara McQuaid, again, talking about how members of the Hutari, she said, posed a real threat to law enforcement. Here she is on ABC's Nightline on Monday.
Their theory was that when a police officer dies and they have a funeral, police officers from around the country gather and attend in large numbers, and this would be an opportunity for them to use improvised explosive devices to take out a huge number of police officers.
Ruth Marcus, we don't want to be thinking or talking about IEDs in this country, but here's a pretty substantial bunch of arrests, and video all over television of these guys all camoed up and very well armed and with a plan that the government says they were determined to execute. What's going on here, Ruth?
Well, there's a lot of anger, and there's a reasonably small, I hope, number of crazy people who are willing to act on that anger. It illustrates a bunch of things, I think. One is how vulnerable we are as a society to acts like this. Look at what happened in Moscow with the subway bombing. We're lucky that we haven't experienced anything like that here, but certainly a homegrown group like the Hutari or an outside group like Islamic terrorists could, God forbid, try to pull off something like that here. We have very few defenses against it. I think the other thing that's interesting about the Hutari, and I want to be really careful about how I phrase this, mm-hmm. is that the real and very heartfelt anger that you see expressed in things like the Tea Party movement and the concerns about the direction of the country and this fierce feeling that it needs to be taken back. I disagree with that view, but I don't think it's outrageous or should be disallowed. But I do worry about the way in which it sort of acts as an accelerant to people who are clearly just off the charts crazy, like these Hutari folks.
Kim Strassel, how about it? Is Hutari Tea Party spelled backwards?
No. I mean, this is crazy. These people are crazy. They would be crazy in any circumstance with any president under any legislative circumstances and whatever they are. And I mean, one of the things that I think is very important here is that America is slowly coming to the understanding, and it has over the past decades, that we are a country that allows so much freedom of religion, so much freedom of speech. You are always going to have groups like this. And they come in many different forms. Sometimes they are religious organizations. Sometimes they are militia-type groups motivated by a hatred of the government.
But
sometimes,
isn't this just a different moment, Kim? I mean, we see big placards with pistols right outside the Capitol building. Guys actually carried, you know, assault rifles to political gatherings. Isn't this not just an ordinary moment in these terms in American society?
Well, I don't know. Was Waco ordinary or not? I think, like I said, we've had these. One of the things that I thought was encouraging about this is that the Justice Department has certainly come to the understanding that this is a fact of life. And one of the good parts of this was that these people were arrested and indicted before anyone was hurt, before anyone was killed, before a raid was necessary. You know, and that's a very positive thing, that we have law enforcement agencies who understand that they have to be as vigilant on this as they do on everything else. But I have a harder, yes, there is a lot of upheaval and controversy in the country right now, and I'm sure that that does encourage people to be angry. But that's very different from people who simply are unhinged on their own and would be unhinged regardless of this.
Jack Beatty, I'm looking at another news blurb here saying federal law enforcement officials are warning that a call by, this is a different group, an extremist group, for dozens of governors to leave office or be removed could lead to violence. More than 30 governors have received letters from this group calling itself guardians of the free republics. Constant strain in American history, Jack, or something different with the Hutari and all the rest?
Well, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, there's a quantitative difference. Just in the last year, they count a 244% increase in militia groups. This partly spurred by the recession, partly spurred by racist resentment of President Obama. And, of course, it isn't just these groups. It's the lone individuals with perhaps vestigial connections with these groups. Today, Talking Points Memo has the top 10 of the anti-government crazies who have shown up. There was Joe Stack, the fellow in Austin who slammed into an IRS headquarters with his plane. There was on and on people who have killed guards and policemen and others out of anti-government rage.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Late Night TV had a ball this week. Stephen Colbert scolded the Houtari militia in Michigan, which was reportedly planning to kill a policeman, bomb the funeral, and wage war on the U.S. government.
A big wag of my finger at the Houtari for making heavily armed apocalyptic Christian militias look bad.
Jay Leno riffed on the president's plans to open up oil exploration.
Well, earlier today, President Obama canceled the annual White House Easter egg hunt. Instead, the kids are going to be on the lawn of the White House drilling for oil. That's the new thing.
And David Letterman counted down the top 10 Republican National Committee excuses for expensing a strip club.
The number one Republican National Committee excuse, research for pending legislation, no stripper left behind. There you go.
Ah, boy, week of jokes. Ruth Marcus is here from the Washington Post, Kim Strassel from the Wall Street Journal, and Jack Beatty. Dave, in Des Moines, Iowa. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, real quick. I'm a gun owner, and unfortunately I have to rub shoulders with these folks sometime. I think it's a grave error to take these people as just crazies and fringe groups. I mean,
you're talking Houtari and its ilk, if it has an ilk, I guess, Dave.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and they're getting marching orders from Glenn Beck, from all the right-wing radio, and these people are taking it very seriously. I mean, it only took two guys and one rifle to lock down Washington, D.C. for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks or months, and I to call them crazy and to call them fringe, I believe, is a mistake. This is serious and very scary.
Crazy, not the right word. Dave, we got it. We'll look at it. Jerry in Brewstertown, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Greetings, Tom.
Hi.
You've got several issues that show hypocrisy, including the Houtari, because they're talking about it taking out indiscriminately, just shooting a police officer and then ambushing more police officers, which, according to the Bible, that most people use this, thou shalt not kill.
Mm-hmm.
The Pope is exploring his hypocrisy to the nth degree, and so is the Republican National Committee by claiming the moral high ground, and then they've been exposed hundreds of times in the last 6 years.
Well, that's a real broad brush from Houtari to the Vatican, but you've got the commandment right there, thou shalt not kill. Ann in Omaha, Nebraska, you're on the air, Ann.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say the society as a whole is angry, very angry. You go to the superstore, to the store, to shop, someone bumps your basket, they don't say, excuse me, and they're rude, and children are rude. So you have a rude, angry society, so you have many of these people, whether they're Christians or not, who are not very happy. They're just not happy people.
And we've got it. Well, callers want to talk about it, so let's pick it up. Ruth, you know, there it is, the line drawn by Dave from Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck to Houtari. You know, if something really bad happens, is that line going to be sitting there in front of us, or, you know, is there some separation here?
Well, I hope there's a separation, but as I said earlier, I really worry about the influence of the Glenn Becks. And I know this is not going to make Sarah Palin happy, but when she has, you know, people in literally crosshairs, I understand the metaphor that she's using. But under the circumstances that the last caller said, which is this is a rude, angry, and potentially violent society, possibly not the best metaphor to use. And as to the rudeness, I think that the notion that the Democratic National Committee is selling T-shirts that say BFD, I'm not allowed to say what that stands for on the air, and I'm spending a lot of time trying to get my teenage children not to use words like that.
Oh, this is the Biden, I see, the Biden gospel, okay.
So, you know, we should all just really try to tone it down a notch.
Yes, Kim, please.
A couple of points. Implicit in all of this talk about the Houtari is this some idea that society creates and feeds these people.
Not society. It was Glenn Beck, I think, was named.
Right. Has anyone actually heard Glenn Beck advocate the slaughter of policemen recently? Like, I mean, I think we need to be careful here with what we suggest.
Well, no, but I've heard very fiery critiques of a United States government described as a Nazi government. Americans fight Nazis. It's not that long a leap.
Well,
is it?
It's not. That's far different. And these really? Things actually do matter from actually calling on people to go out and wage war against the government. The other thing, too, is the media always tends to have a very, you know, kind of shifting memory on this. I remember 8 years of websites from very radical liberal people and groups calling on people to assassinate George W. Bush, kill Bush, hate America sites, America's torturers. You know, and we were careful, or I would hope we would have been careful not to suggest that they were the cause, for instance, of terrorist attacks against us.
But here so, you've got heavily armed men in the woods and planting IEDs. I mean, isn't it different from blogging?
Well, no. I was making the comparison between them and Glenn Beck, for instance. Mm. You know, I'm not suggesting the bloggers were picking up arms, but they were suggesting that people kill George W. Bush. So what I'm saying is that, you know, this happens all the time. People voice their opinions. There's a huge difference between voicing an opinion and a critique of a government and going out and hiding in the woods and going around and collecting things for bomb making. And we need to put those into different categories.
Yeah, this equivalency theme has come up before, and maybe, but I got to say there's some significant element of degree that seems different to me. But I don't know. Lisa, West Hartford, Connecticut. Lisa, you're on the air.
Hi. I think that President Obama is doing what he needs to do for this country. I'm irritated with liberals who are naive. I'm a liberal myself, but I think that compromise is necessary, and I think that what President Obama is doing in terms of things like drilling are things that he needs to do to move this country forward. He's doing what he needs to do. He's compromising where he needs to compromise. He's getting things done. I'm profoundly grateful to have a president who is intelligent and capable and competent and is moving our country forward.
So don't be naive, you say, on the liberal front. Lisa, we've got it. Certain things maybe have to be done. Jack, I'll ask you about that one more. Craig in Boston. Craig, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to submit that there have been torching of churches, there have been these eco-terrorists burning down housing developments, and Whale Wars on TV is essentially a left-wing group that's out there confronting in a way that's contrary to the international legal standards, and they get their own television show for it. So, you know, it's just not categorized really as a left-wing movement as such.
Eco-terror and fighting whaling ships. Jack, there's the equivalency argument. Again, touch it. And you also hear Lisa saying she's happy for the president's compromises, that if that's what it takes to get something done.
I can understand that point of view. And if it results in something being done other than oil slicks showing up on beaches, great. But on the question of violent extremist groups and their connection to rhetoric, I just don't think there's any question but that now the anger, the extremism, the hatred is on the right. I mean, just the numbers. I just pointed out the Southern Poverty Law Center, 244% jump in right-wing extremist groups this last year.
But Kim would say yes, but, you know, dial back and you'll see a lot of left-wing anger under the last administration.
I don't know how to compare these things. I do think the presence of something like Fox News changes the picture. And this is just repeating what others have said. But, you know, when you indulge in rhetoric about the government coming to get people's guns and this list of people who've killed policemen and others that Talking Points memo has just last year, again and again, they're coming to get my guns. They're not coming to get your guns. When you have Republican politicians standing on the floor of Congress and saying the IRS is going to hire 16,000 agents to look into your tax returns to make sure you're buying Obama's insurance, That is, according to the fact checkers, mostly false. It's based on a Republican projection off something the CBO indicated about the growth and budget for the IRS.
Still, they are going to be paying attention to whether you're buying insurance.
They're going to be paying attention to companies, not really so much to people, according to the IRS director. And when they say it's a government takeover of medical care, it is nothing of the sort. It's a boon to the private insurance industry. So, you know, there's a connection, it seems to me, between these extreme ideas that the government is coming after your health care, your grandmother, your guns, and this wider climate, these so-called crazies out there who are influenced, it seems to me, at some level by this penumbra of suspicion.
We've got other news to look at. I'll take one more caller on this. Reese in Rockwell City, Iowa. Reese, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out that what people are joining these militias for isn't because they're crazies. I hear a lot of people talking and actually applauding some of these actions, and it's mostly because they're afraid. Their choices are being taken away from them. They feel like they're not free anymore. They don't get to choose the direction that their lives are going in, and they feel helpless, and it makes them scared.
Do you think they're right that their freedoms are being taken away, or is this?
No, I think they're going about it completely the wrong way because, I mean, we're a democratic society. What we're supposed to do is vote somebody else in that's going to do the job that we want them to do, of course. But I'm saying that the reason that they're reacting is just like any group who's afraid. They're afraid we're going to take their freedoms and their life away from them, so they're willing to commit violence to keep that from happening.
Yeah, Reese, thank you very much for your call. Dear panel, if I may, let me turn. Maybe this isn't entirely unrelated, but I wonder what you think of this federal judge ruling on Wednesday that the National Security Agency's program of surveillance without warrants, this was started up after 9/11 under the Bush administration, was illegal. Judge Vaughn Walker ruling that the government, quoting here from the New York Times, saying had violated a 1978 federal statute requiring court approval for domestic surveillance when it intercepted phone calls. Ruth, I guess, what does the Obama administration do with this? Does the Justice Department now have to go back and bring charges against people who pushed that? There's a civil damages being sought here, but what about the Justice Department?
Well, one of the things it first has to do is to decide whether to appeal this ruling. And you once again have this fantastic irony of the Justice Department supposedly peopled by the Al-Qaeda 7, you know, the lawyers that Liz Cheney and her group went after because they had represented alleged terrorist detainees, essentially following, for all intents and purposes, the legal blueprint laid down by the Bush administration, with some exceptions. But the Obama administration, by and large, has taken a very, I'm not sure if conservative is the right word, but certainly in step with the Bush administration, outside of torture, approach to the legal issues relating to the war on terror. And I think it faces a very difficult decision about how to proceed in this wiretapping case. It tried to get this case thrown out of court originally. And I think the last thing, certainly, that President Obama wants to see done is to have his Justice Department prosecute previous officials of a previous government for violating people's civil rights.
Kim, where do you think this is going? There will always be terrorism threats. I mean, there was an FBI informer, apparently, with the Houthari. Do you see the Obama administration following the same playbook, moving away, bringing charges?
This will be appealed because what's been missed in some of the stories is this is actually a very serious constitutional question that
yes.
the judge ruled on. It is. He was asked, this case had already been up to the Ninth Court of Appeals and come back to him. He was asked to make a judgment on whether or not this intelligence security, this FISA law, trumps the state secrets privileges of presidents,
right.
Which is an Article II constitutional question. And so, you know, he made this ruling, but we're talking about one federal judge. It will go up to the Ninth Circuit. It may well go to the Supreme Court. And given what the Obama administration has done so far on this, they very much mirrored the Bush administration on this question. It is a very good bet that this will go to the top.
Jack, the judge saying, yes, he went right at those big issues and said what happened here amounts to, in his words, unfettered executive branch discretion that had, he wrote, obvious potential for governmental abuse and overreaching. We're going to see this in the Supreme Court, Jack?
I really don't know. I don't know whether the administration will appeal it or not. I suspect they just want it to go away. You know, this is another area where you see the president's, quote, pragmatism. Certainly many of his supporters felt in 2008 that he was going to, turn the page on the Bush impositions on liberty, that there were going to be prosecutions and so on. Nothing. He completely turned away from that. And, he pleaded state secrets here. And indeed, in 2008, he voted for that that law that essentially ex post facto clearance to the Bush administration people for what they did. And also right at the bottom of this, you know, if you appeal it, they can, the Bush people can say what they said in other matters, which is our Office of Legal Counsel gave us the okay, therefore it was okay by us. Well, that seems to be the standard explanation. But the president's whole standing on this, I think, has disappointed some of his civil liberties supporters.
I'm going to take one last call from Des Moines. John, our time is very short, John. What's the word?
Well, my point, Tom, is I think we should think about the character of the man we have in the White House now. 2 weeks ago, we had yahoos yelling epithets at black congressmen. And we have this fine man in the White House coming back with humor. And I think we're very lucky to have this man at the helm right now.
It's a generous comment, John, and we'll take it at the end of this, Holy Week and Passover and all the rest. We'll take it in just that spirit. I appreciate your call. A lot of news out there we didn't even get to in Moscow and the French president here, the U.S. trying to get people together on Iran, an hour on the phone with the Chinese leader. That's interesting. We'll have to tackle it all in the week ahead. I'm very grateful to each of you for being with us today. Kimberly Strassel at The Wall Street Journal. Kim, it's always great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Kim Strassel, editorial board member for The Wall Street Journal. And Ruth Marcus, columnist and editorial writer at The Washington Post. Ruth, it's always great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot.
Jack, have a great weekend, sir, and thanks for joining us today.
Same to you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, and John Wibby, with help from Shireen Jafari and Case Wickman. Our senior producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.